What is your favourite cookbook?
Oh, come on.
You only have to pick one out of 1,200.
Welcome to the Food, Family and Friends podcast, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. Now it's time to join your host, Vanessa Baxter.
I'll take what's good. Ooh, 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 what's good.
Your home, which is absolutely beautiful, and you've done the extraordinaire cuisine editor thing of producing this platter, which
is beautiful. As I said, the only thing I cooked was the bread. I dipped it in some olive oil and put it in the oven just to give you something crispy and burnt it. So I've done really well.
Well, it looks absolutely beautiful and the colours look spectacular.
Yeah, I hit all the burnt bits on the bottom.
I'm not talking about the bread. I'm talking about...
I'm very proud of that bread.
Platter.
I worked hard to do that bread, Vanessa.
I can't believe the olives have not come off your own tree and been brined in your own kitchen in bucketfuls of salt.
Oh, yes, I would if I could, but who's got time for that? Life's too short.
Exactly. So we have a rare moment of sunshine. It's absolutely beautiful, and we're sitting outside, which is gorgeous. So, Kelly, this is awesome because I don't know you very well, but we've been following each other on Instagram, and there have been a few posts that you've done, and I've thought, oh, that is so funny. We've had almost, I think, somewhere along our lines, a little bit of a parallel life. So I can't wait to ask you a few questions along those things. But from what I can see, you've done lots of travelling.
Yes.
Before you've ended up and landed here in New Zealand. So do you want to share with the listeners just some of the travel that you've done?
Oh, well, I mean, it's been a long road, very long and bumpy road to get me to here. But it's the dream job, so I'm delighted, absolutely delighted to be here. But I think I've always travelled. My background was hotel management, so I think sort of the first big part of my travels, I went over and went to work for Intercontinental Hotels Middle East and stayed over there for about 8 years, and that's where I met my husband, and it was quite hysterical. I opened Dubai's first Spanish tapas bar.
Oh, wow.
Before we really thought that through and thought about pork and all the things that go with tapas.
Exactly,
and it was quite hilarious. It was hilarious because it was in a beautiful 5-star hotel, and of course the locals were all, well, we still want the butler service and the silver tray and all the tongs. It was like, no, it's tapas. You don't. And I brought in these amazing two Sevillanas guitarists and singers, and they were in there, you know, at the opening, doing all this stuff, and they're all saying, can you turn them down? You know, we can't talk, we can't hear on the phone. And it's like, oh my God, no, what have I done?
That's fantastic.
So we did 8 years in Dubai, and then there we opened our own events company and did very well there. Then I wanted to come home, and Jonathan wanted to go home, and he's Spanish, my husband.
Spanish and you're Aussie.
So we did the coin, flipped the coin, and he won. So we went to Spain, which was not a hardship. I mean, I was very excited about going to live in Spain, especially with family there. So we did 5 years in Spain, and then I eventually made my way back home from there.
Wow.
And we went home. I'm a WA girl, so we went back to WA, and I was working for the ABC, for the Australian Broadcasting Commission. And then I got a promotion and moved to Melbourne to become their content director. And then I got another promotion and was asked to go to Canberra, and I was sitting in Canberra checking it out. I had a couple of weeks there to check it out and make a decision, and I was like, oh, I was in my hotel room with a bottle of wine and some cheese going, I don't know if I really want to do political spills and all that sort of thing anymore. I really want to work in food full time. I had a show called The Main Ingredient for many years that was national on Australian radio. I was doing that in Spain before we went home.
Ah.
Mum had a gourmet food store when I grew up, so I grew up, you know, in sort of cheese and olives and
what was that?
Charcuterie. And
what was that store?
It was called Pat Specialty Foods in Subiaco.
Really?
Yeah, so that was my childhood, was growing up and working in there on the weekends and helping Mum make all the pâtés and all that. So that's where the sort of love of food came from. Then I went into hotels and got a love for hotels and massive events and all that sort of thing. So I ended up in Canberra, and I thought, no, this is not really what I want to do. And the job for cuisine came up, and I'd been stalking cuisine for years and a subscriber. And Sarah Nichols, the editor then, you know, I'd followed her through her whole time through Delicious and then into cuisine. And it was like, oh, it's too good to be true. And I got it. And here I am. And I'm just
blown
beside
away.
Myself. I'm so happy. I've never, ever, I've had lots of jobs and I've had a great life, but I've never been in a situation where I just can't wait to get up every morning. Just can't wait to get out the door and get to work. You know, it's just every day is just
That is so
incredible.
Fantastic. But have you worked in magazines before or not?
No.
Wow.
No, never in magazines. Never. Almost in Spain got into a magazine, and then that was when at that time we made a decision to go back to Australia, so I had to drop it just as I was about to get that through.
Wow, that's amazing.
Big on content. I've been a content director, and I've produced and had my own radio shows and done a lot of video work, but never print.
So is that a steep learning curve side of the job for you?
A very steep learning curve, yeah. But wow, what a ride.
Amazing ride.
And I kind of think it was good timing for me, because coming in with fresh eyes and not being of a print mentality, I was able to actually go, well, yeah, you know, this might be how you've always done it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to always do it that way. And, you know, having looked at content and being very much so with the Australian Broadcasting Commission about that, well, we're not just radio makers or print journalists or online content specialists anymore. We've all got a multi-skill. We've all got to work across all the platforms. And part of my job was to get all of those teams united and working across those platforms. So it's kind of, you know, interesting to come into the print world where it's at the moment, where it's exactly that. Everybody's having to relook at what they do, skill up and, you know.
And adapt to the changing world around them.
That's right, which is changing so fast.
Well,
so
our children, who I think are similar age, you have
18.
An 18-year-old son. Mm. I have 16 and, soon to be 16 and 14 and a bit. So close.
Yeah.
Well, just that whole millennial age group. I mean, these kids are not going to grow up sitting around picking up a magazine.
No.
Without any digital content around them at the same time.
No.
I mean, they're going to be flicking maybe from a magazine to a phone to an iPad again, or not even picking up the magazine in the first place. So, you know, they're never going to be like a you and I at the same age who would have been like lying on the floor flicking magazine pages.
I wonder. I mean, my son looks at my magazine and goes, you know, every time I get that magazine in my hand and I bring it home the first, you know, when it's arrived, and I'm like,
super excited.
Oh, my goodness, we have worked so hard on this one, you know. And he looks at it and goes, meh, you know. And he looks at newspapers and goes, why did you buy that? You know, it's all online. Why did you buy that? But I kind of feel, you know, I mean, for Cuisine, we've made some changes. We're sort of taking it back to that aspirational level. I think for a little while it was one size fits all. And when I looked at what was around when I came in, I thought, you know, they all look the same. Mm. There's no point of difference. And Cuisine has always been the leader. And it's the iconic magazine. It's very trusted. There's no other publication in food that's as trusted as Cuisine, because it turns 30 this year. We're celebrating 30 years. But I looked at it and thought, you know, you're old enough and wise enough now to be able to stand on your own, take a few risks, become more contemporary, grow a new audience, and be really honest about the fact that you're not targeting people that don't know about food, who can't cook and need 101 ways with mince on a Wednesday night. Mm. We're not.
No.
We're targeting people that love food, that know how to cook and that want to be challenged, that want to know what the hot new ingredient is, you know. But I do believe that even so, that printed beautiful magazine is always going to be around, because it's not one size fits all.
Mm.
It's a specialist piece of content. And eventually even those kids, you know, I kind of feel like those screens, you're switched on all the time, you can't concentrate, you're jumping from one thing to another, you've got ads yelling at you. But when you've got a book or a magazine, call me old-fashioned, it's my time, it's my luxury time for me.
I agree.
Being bombarded, I'm not being forced to look at something that I don't want to, you know. And I kind of think it'll go full circle, a bit like the revival of vinyl. And all the kids getting into vinyl. I think that there will always be a place for these beautiful printed publications, but they'll be a temple to the brand that you have, and then it's that digital representation is where you'll get them.
Mm.
You know, they'll have to be able to play in that space as well.
Mm. And I mean, Cuisine is a beautiful magazine. It is the sort of magazine that you don't throw away.
No.
You keep them because they are as beautiful as having a new cookbook every month. I mean, they really are very, very beautiful. Every 2 months
Every 2 months.
Every 2 months. It's, yeah.
Although I've got all my delicious and I've got all my gourmet traveller. I adore gourmet traveller. You know, my husband, when we got here, you've just been looking around my house at all my cookbooks.
Yes.
I mean, I bought probably
literally thousands,
over 1,200 cookbooks, mm-hmm. and I love them and I will never part with them. But then there's also all the magazine collections, which I also bought with me, and I'll never part with those. But I don't know where you stop, really. I'm not a hoarder, but
you know, well, you're obviously I think you might be.
But only with those. I mean, yeah. It's very minimalist. It's
it
not,
is.
You know.
You actually apologised about your house, and apart from the fact that there are lots of cookbooks nicely put onto bookshelves, I think your house is quite spotless.
No, I have a partly white cat called Truffle, and by the end of the week until you get to the vacuuming, you've got fur balls everywhere. If you look closely... I'm glad you're not
Never
wearing black
mind.
Pants, Vanessa.
I'm not.
Just keep her away from you. I haven't brushed her for a week.
Don't worry, I've got two dogs. Your time in Dubai, my sister also lived in the Middle East. She lived in Abu Dhabi, so I spent quite a lot of time in Abu Dhabi, which is changing now as well, but as is Dubai daily, weekly and annually.
I probably wouldn't recognise it now.
Probably not.
It's changing so fast, yeah.
Yeah. How did you in the end serve your Spanish tapas? How did you get around some of those things? I mean, I know in Dubai it's okay in the 5-star hotels to serve wine. So your wine was sorted. You were okay to serve your alcohol.
It's interesting because when I remember being on the plane, actually. I remember being on the plane and going over there. I'd got the job and I was on my way. And on the plane thinking... So I wonder, well, at that time I'd been hired as a kind of entertainment manager. It was one of the best jobs I've ever had. I mean, this job is great, but what a job. And it was my job to sort of hire the entertainment for the hotel and sort of book all the bits and pieces into the Intercon in Dubai had 18 food and beverage outlets.
So big hotel.
You know, and you'd finish renovating one theme and then the next thing you'd be opening up a new restaurant and redoing that one because they were a bit bored with that one and, you know, they had big budgets over there. So, and, you know, they'd bring in all the chefs. So it was an amazing experience and you could fly in Spanish musicians for the Spanish bar and you could fly in, you know, a jazz musician. I'd go to Chicago and audition the jazz musicians to bring back to play in the jazz bar and all that sort of thing. But I remember sitting on the plane and thinking, this is going to be interesting. I wonder, will I be serving orange juice in this beautiful VIP bar up the top with the jazz band? How is this all going to work? And then I got out of the airport and into the cab. And the taxi driver, hello, how are you, madam? And all those things. I'm fine. What are you doing? And, you know, I'm going to start my job at the Intercon. Oh, really? Are you married? No, I'm not married. And at that stage, I would have been probably about in my early 30s. Are you married? Oh, you're not married. You don't have any children. You don't have a husband. No. Oh, too
very
late.
Old
he
for
went,
you.
He went, oh, too late for you then. And I
thought,
how rude. And I'm thinking, what have I got myself into? You know, like if I'm too old at 32, goodness me, you know, the old shelf life's running out. But, yeah, it was interesting. But very cosmopolitan, lots of challenges. I mean, just being a female manager at that time in Dubai was quite challenging. I had, you know, it was quite interesting, the attitude, because there was a little bit of that attitude of, well, if you're not married and you're not home with your children and your husband, then there must be something
not
bit strange
quite
about you.
Right.
Yeah, you know. Mm. So it was challenging, but what an opportunity. You know, what an opportunity. And just amazing, amazing hotels, amazing architecture. And that was then. Now you look at what's going on there now with Palm Island and the things that are going on out in Jumeirah. It's just incredible place.
So how did you end up there and at that job? How did you end up in Dubai in the first place at the Intercontinental?
I just got to a point where I was actually events manager for the Diamond Beach Casino, which I adored. And, you know, I was working in hotels in Australia and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. But I was up in Darwin and, you know, people go, oh, Darwin, but what a place. Such real people, such a beautiful place, absolutely beautiful place, real people. And in a casino, you know, we were flying in very wealthy people from all over the country, the high rollers and things to be at the casino and spend lots of money. So, you know, it was a great gig. But I was just, I wanted to travel and I had a friend that had gone over to Dubai to teach and he said, oh, you've got to come and have a look at what's going on with the hotels here. They'd love you, you know. And I thought, oh, I wouldn't mind going over and just having a look. So I went over for a holiday and then, you know, met someone that was working at the Intercon and just fell into it and stayed. 8 years.
So funny.
Ended up with my own business there, you know, so.
Yeah. So were you able to start your own business in Dubai? So you left the Intercontinental. You were able to actually start your own business?
Because you can, you know, everything that you do in Dubai, you were sponsored. You had a local sponsor. So you were, you know, and that local sponsor was responsible for you. If you got into trouble, they got into trouble. So, you know, you would basically pay a local sponsor and they would, you know, clear all of your papers and take responsibility for you. And I opened the company with my husband. I was great because I had lots of contacts through working at the Intercon. I knew the Sheikh and all of the Sheikh's people, and you know, so it was great, and we were able to open an events company and do really massive events for the Sheikh.
Wow.
So we did a lot, you know, they used to have their summer surprises every summer when it was 48 degrees and they'd be doing ice shows and I'd be flying in ice skaters from the Disney shows and, you know, making these amazing sets and all of these costumes and things and doing these massive productions for, you know, audiences of sort of 7 to 10,000, big festivals for 70,000, 80,000 people. It was just great. It was great fun.
How fantastic. Is your husband also into events and food? And
yeah, he's I'm not talking to him at the moment about the food because I think he's had too much time on his hands since we've got here. And he's suddenly decided that he's vegetarian, won't eat meat or fish or eggs or cheese or anything, and he'll only eat fish if he can catch it himself.
Oh, good grief.
Which is causing
challenges within your home?
Well, it's hard because it's hard because what it's made me realise is that he has, you know, he goes, oh, don't worry, I'll take care of myself. But then I go to cook for myself and our son and then I think I've got to cook something different for him. And he goes, no, don't bother, I'll take care of it. And then it's made me realise how important cooking is to me and sharing because I can't, if I just cook for Mitchell and I can't share the meal with him and we don't all sit down together to eat it. And that's, I work such long hours and so hard, that's the one thing that I really
treasure
being able to do for them is cook that meal. Not every night, but, you know, at least 4 nights a week, cook a really good meal and on the weekends when I've got time.
So that is absolutely at my heart as well. Mm. That's my giving. That's what my mum always did for me. And that's my form. That's my personality. That's my, you know.
That's what it's all about,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it's all about for me. It's like showing my love through being able to cook beautiful food
that's
and
right.
share it. And I have exactly the same issue. My husband usually absolutely loves it and he's totally fine. But even yesterday he said, No, don't worry about me. I'm going to go off and do some exercise. And I immediately feel, oh, that's actually a real letdown because I have already thought, I'm going to play with my new sous vide machine and I've had my lamb chops in there and I've done this and I've done that. And you're going to go off. And it shouldn't matter because it's a weeknight and who cares and the kids are back at school and everyone's all over the place. But for me, it really does matter because that's my special moment.
Yeah,
and I want everyone to be involved in it.
No, I totally get that.
That would drive me crazy.
But it's that thing also of, so it's not him saying, oh, I want you to cook something else for me.
No, he's saying, don't worry, hands off, I can do it.
But it's also made me realise that I do, you know, it's harder if I've got to think, okay, it's just going to be vegetarian. And, you know, I love my veggies and I love salads and I love all that sort of thing. But you do realise when you're confronted with that, that it's not as easy to then be so creative because you can't just chuck the lamb chops on the barbie or, you know, you go to put the halloumi. I think, okay, I'll do a beautiful snow pea and asparagus with halloumi. Oh, no, cheese. Can't do cheese.
No,
oh, I'll
cheese.
Go to do a pasta with it. Oh, can't do cheese. Can't do cream. Can't do, you know, like.
But he's Spanish. Oh, where has this influence
come from? He's on thin ice, basically. You know,
he is on thin ice.
Yes, it's thin.
Where has this influence come from?
So thin that he should be suffering from hypothermia at the moment.
But where has he got this from, Kelly?
I'm hoping it will pass.
Is it a Kiwi thing? Has it become a hunter-gatherer thing?
I don't know. But it's horrible. But
yes, I feel your pain.
A very long-winded way of answering your question. But yes, we have a lot in common. And when we worked together in hotels and events, he's got a background in, you know, staging and lighting and engineering. And he's an ex-DJ, you know. Now he's way too old to be a DJ. He still thinks that he's young enough, but he's not. But, you know, he absolutely loves it. So that we had that sort of – it was great because I'm kind of the ideas person and he would bring those ideas into a physical reality.
Fantastic.
You know, 'cause you can have all the ideas in the world, but –
someone needs to be logical
about being able to actually make it happen. Yeah.
So when then you went to Spain.
Yes.
And what did you just eat your way around Spain, hang out with his family and be fed beautiful Spanish food or what?
We did. I mean, we went to live there. We were there for 5 years. So we did not as much travelling as I'd like to because I was working. And I started, it was funny because with my hotel background, everybody said, oh, they'll love you. You'll just, you know, you'll go into a hotel job straight away. But I didn't speak Spanish. Very little. You know, I can say, para mí un vino tinto, por favor, but by the time I work out how to arrange those words in a sentence, the bar's usually shut because it takes me so long to work out how to put the words in the right order. So, you know, and a lot of people spoke English there, so I didn't pick up a great deal of Spanish. I got basics, but because I didn't speak any European languages, and the hotels, you know, that's what you needed.
Yeah,
it wasn't enough
absolutely.
To just speak English. So that was very difficult. So then I thought, okay, well, what can I do? And I went and got a job at a radio station. And I'd been doing a little bit of radio in Dubai. And I thought, okay, well, you know, I'll have a go at that. And I sort of just worked my way up through there. And that's when I started my program, The Main Ingredient, you know, doing restaurant reviews and talking about the food in Spain.
Oh, fantastic.
And it sort of grew from there. Yeah.
In English, though, on the radio.
It was in English on a station called Onda Cero, which is like the BBC or the ABC of Spain.
Ah.
So they have an English branch. And, of course, in where we were in Marbella, which is in the south of Spain in Andalusia, you know, there's a lot of expats.
Yes.
And there's a lot of British expats. So they were catering to them. So it was perfect. So there I was. I spoke English. Off I went.
Kelly, I was on the radio in Jakarta in English for the expats as well.
Oh, my God!
Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah. Wow.
But in the end, they had to send a black van and get me out because the Suharto down. We were there for the Suharto downfall. And,
oh, and
then,
you were going to say you'd done something horrible and they arrested you.
Well, they needed to get me out
because they
realised that the powers that be were not quite clear necessarily on what I was saying all the time and whether it was appropriate or not.
And neither were you, probably.
And we're Aussie. I mean, we just say it how it is, but that's not the way you behave on radio in Jakarta.
No.
So my time was fantastic, but came to a rather haltingly swift end.
Yes.
Yes, swift end.
Pack up and get out.
Yeah, exactly.
Before you get locked up.
Just off the radio station, but it was quite amusing at the time. We didn't have kids or anything. I just found it quite an adventure, really. But isn't that funny? Yeah.
Yeah, we do. We have parallel paths.
Oh, we have some very parallel paths because I was an expat all over the place as well. And guess what? My first job was at the Intercontinental in Hyde Park Corner in London.
Oh, gosh, really?
Yeah, and we had the Sultan of Brunei's daughter living in there as well. And he would also have all of his kids' birthday parties at the Intercontinental in London.
So you know what that's
like. So when you're describing those events, I know exactly, because we had a crazy Disney party for this 10-year-old and the London Philharmonic Orchestra played as people arrived.
You know, they asked us to do a production of Aladdin while we were there in Dubai. And so, again, it was an ice production in the summer. So we flew in. So I just went to Disney because I know that they do the whole circuit and they've got all these skaters from all over the world. And we flew in skaters, Disney skaters from Australia and Russia and England. And they all came in and we made all the costumes in Dubai because, I mean, the choice of fabrics and you know, it was just
beautiful.
Easier to do that and absolutely beautiful and I could control it there. And we built sets. We made the most magnificent pink palace. You know, Arabic style palace, and it was the most beautiful, big, three-dimensional, massive set on the ice. Just gorgeous. I'll have to try and find some photos for you. But when it was finished, normally those shows would tour for 3 to 6 years. It was on for 3 months, and then it was finished, and the set went to the Sheikh's backyard for the kids to play.
Of course it did. That's amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
Yeah.
Going back to a question I had, though, about Dubai, with regards to your tapas, how did you get around the pork and stuff?
Oh, well, we didn't have any.
Oh, you just didn't have any.
No,
so you would use beef sausage and do a similar
right.
thing. But
they didn't get it. That bar didn't work, actually.
Didn't.
They just didn't get it.
Yeah.
It was it was too early in Dubai. Now they will have, I'm sure, Spanish tapa bars all over the place. But it'll be very, very different. And, of course, you know, you can in other places. But that particular bar and that hotel was really frequented for the local UAE business guys and all those things. So they weren't going to touch it.
Right.
So, yeah.
So you started your main ingredient in Spain.
Yes.
Then you moved back to Perth.
Yes, I did. Yeah, we went back to Perth for a little while and then to Melbourne.
And you can but you started with the ABC back in Australia, and were you able to launch that show then in Australia?
Yes, they picked it up. I pitched it to them in Australia and they picked it up. So then it just ran nationally for the whole time that I was.
How fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. Loved it.
Absolutely. So what was the premise around the show Australia-wise?
Well, it was really, it was interesting. I had to do it on like Thursday night, so I'd do all my research and editing. Well, not research, I'd do all my editing. Saturdays I'd do all my research, like I'd research what the show was going to be. And then I'd do my interviews sort of during the week at lunchtimes and things like that, or whenever I could get people. But it was really about the stories behind the food you eat. So, you know, it wasn't restaurant reviews and this is the latest, hottest ingredient or anything. It was more about, really, I guess, kind of what I'm trying to do now, shining a light on regional food producers, artisan food producers, the people that grow and cook your food and where your food had come from. And at that time when I started doing that, that paddock to plate thing was not really happening. And then it started to grow, you know, over the sort of last 5 years, it's become absolutely huge, of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's a similar story that's happening here in New Zealand now as New Zealand sort of tries to tell its own food story. It's fascinating.
Oh, it's fantastic. You're here right on the cusp of that happening. Yeah, so you'll just be able to. Yeah,
time,
exactly. Yeah. It's perfect time for you. How long did you live in Melbourne for?
I think we were in Melbourne for just nearly 4 years.
Okay. Favourite food and restaurants of Melbourne?
Oh, God.
It's a bit hard, isn't it?
It's hard.
It's an amazing city, isn't it?
Just the most amazing place. The cafe culture, the little winding little alleyways. And, you know, I mean, I've got to say, I like Frank Camora's stuff. I mean, I think Movida was, mm-hmm. I guess, because of the Spanish connection. Mm-hmm. But I loved the first little bar that he had that you could never get into. Because it's just, you know, you've got to be really lucky to get in there. But if you turn up at the right time and then just sitting at that bar and watching them, you know, serve little bits and pieces, I love that. That's my way of eating. I love that.
I think you nailed the Melbourne thing, though. It's about the culture, isn't it? Mm. It's a city that's got its own culture and quite distinct from Sydney. And I know, I mean, I grew up in Melbourne and I also lived in Sydney for a while, and there is the definite Melbourne-Sydney rivalry on who has the best restaurants and yes. who has the best food. And I'm definitely on the Melbourne side of things for that. But I think it's because of that whole culture.
Sydney would never let you get away with that.
But no, I know.
But it's very, very different.
It's very different. And I think it's not that it's not about the food in Sydney. There are some fantastic restaurants, of course, but I think it's that culture of being able to walk around in Melbourne, even through the CBD, and now all the lanes just throw up so many opportunities to
That's
stop and
right.
eat
but, and
beautiful
the coffee shops,
food.
And the cafe culture and the, I mean, it's very similar here too, but the cafe culture and the, all of a sudden cafes weren't just toasties and, you know, donuts and muffins. They were serious food places. I mean, you could go in and you were seriously eating innovative, edgy food. And that was what was so wonderful about Melbourne. And I think they did that better than Sydney. Sydney, of course, has got Kylie and has got Peter Gordon and has got, you know, all of those amazing chefs. Melbourne's got, you know, Guy Grossi and George Columbaris and Matthew Wilkinson. And I mean, there's so many amazing chefs. And that's actually what was so great about The Main Ingredient, was I just worked my way around all of them and had just little up close and personal chats with them, you know, about what they did, what their food memories were. I'm really into food history and nostalgia and, you know, why people.
Oh, that's the same with me. That's why I started my podcast.
Yes, exactly.
That's exactly
such
why
a
I'm
great
talking
story.
To you. Yeah. Because I just think everyone that's in food. Food in itself is such a beautiful thing. Like, if people are passionate about food, I know I'm going to love them because I'm so passionate about it. And food is such a positive, well, should be, it's such a positive thing and a way of bringing people together. So if you're passionate about food, you're going to have some great stories.
That's right. And you really just have to put the microphone in front of a person that's passionate about food and they've got a story to tell.
I know, it's
you
beautiful.
Know, so you don't have to work very hard.
I know, and I love it because I get to meet, you know, I get to be able to say, hey, can I come over for a glass of wine? You've said yes because there's a purpose behind it. But, you know, in sharing the stories, we realise, you know, there's so many common links with so many people that I talk to. And also it's inspiring for me to hear those other stories and realise there are so many of us and be able to work with those people, but also to be able to shine the light on others. I mean, everyone knows who you are and who and the Cuisine magazine. And I think, you know, when we first introduced ourselves to each other physically after a few messages on Instagram and there was someone sitting next to me at the time, and she said, "Sorry, who are you?" And you said, "Oh, I'm Kelly Brett. I'm editor of Cuisine." She went, "Oh,
yeah, it's
and
not
you
the Kelly
said,
Brett."
I'm still so surprised to get that reaction.
It's not the Kelly Brett bit at all. It's the editor of Cuisine. I know. God, I'm still not used to that.
Yes, that's what you said.
It's
at
quite
the time.
Scary. It's quite scary.
It is considered the absolute top.
I don't deserve it, really. But I shouldn't be fabulous. Here. I'm still every day looking over my shoulder going, the gig's going to be up. Shortly the gig's going to be up. Someone's going to walk in and go, "We know, Brett. Come on, get out of there. You know, the gig's up." But, oh, my God, I'm having such a great time.
Yeah.
Such a great time.
And how cool. How amazing. It's kind of
can't tell you how much I love it. I just love it.
And the team that you work with, because I don't really know anything about the team behind Cuisine. I mean, I just know I love the magazine. The team that you work with, are they just all passionate foodies?
Absolutely. Yeah. Totally.
Like they have to be to work at Cuisine?
Seriously, to be in a magazine like Cuisine, you have to be absolutely passionate. But what's been interesting is that my style as well, and my style has always been when I manage a team to really try and get them to think and work to their passions and actually really own the content, whatever that content is. So I'm not one of those people, and you do find a lot, especially in the magazine world, which is quite templated, and I've learnt this along the way as I've come into this, that, you know, they do, a lot of them expect to be just told what to do. Like, you know, this issue we're going to do, the Italian issue, and you're
going to
do pasta, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do cheese, and you're going to do, you know, and I don't do that. I like to get my guys in and put up the word on the board that we're going to, you know, is going to be our theme, and I love themes, and because it gives you something to sort of hook, and I'm really very interested in the magazine having a flow and not just being chunks of content that are all put in there that don't mean anything. I like it to be a journey.
A story,
so that you're reading, and things are feeding in and feeding off, and so that it really is a journey, not just a okay, I'm going to go to page 48 because I like that recipe. Because I don't think that's the future for food magazines either. You can get recipes online. You can Google recipes. They might not be Cuisine recipes, and they might not be as trusted, but people do Google recipes. I think we've got a story to tell, and we've got to give them that journey so that they're having that real sense of immersing themselves in something when they open the mag. So the guys, I get them in. You know, we have a very small team, full-time team now. Smaller than I had thought it was going to be, I must say. But we have a lot of contributors, which is wonderful. It means we've got a lot of, you know, blood flowing into
exactly.
it, you know, and a lot of opinions.
Fresh thoughts.
And it kind of makes a bit of a rod for your back, because by opening it up to a brainstorm session with all of them, instead of being able to just dictate and say, "You're doing this and you're doing this," you've actually then got to take all those ideas and then turn them around. And then, you know, so it's a longer process, but I think at the end of it, you get a much better product, because they're all doing things that they're, you know, you get all
their
these
love.
Ideas up on the board, and then you say, "Right, now what floats your boat? What jumps out at you is something that you really want to own." And they go, "Oh, I really want, you know, I like that. I'll do that." And they run with it, and they go and they run with it, and they're totally into it. And they come back, you know, we've got this amazing, the issue that's just coming out now, we've got this amazing, we wanted to tell the story of the raw cheese story in New Zealand, which is a big story. And we have an amazing photographer, Aaron McLean, who does a lot of our covers. And he has a really incredible magazine called Stone Soup.
Oh, yes, I know.
Which comes out a couple of times a year, which is amazing.
It's
absolutely
gorgeous,
amazing little magazine. So I was looking at that, and, you know, Aaron's a brilliant photographer, and he's an ex-chef, and he knows a lot about food, and he tells amazing stories, and he's so passionate about it. And you know, I thought, oh, I wonder, you know, I wonder if we could, why not let him shoot it but also tell the story, you know, and he's come back with this amazing piece. And he worked, you know, my deputy editor, Alice Neville, worked very hard with him on that to, you know, smooth the edges and all that sort of thing, because he's, you know, he's a great writer, and he's a great storyteller, and he's a brilliant photographer. But he's come back with this amazing story, and it's just brilliant, and it wouldn't have been told like that
by
someone that
else.
Had just been given it as an assignment that you know, they weren't really into it. So, yeah, it's really exciting to have this brilliant team of people that are so passionate about it and be able to actually just give them a bit of rope and let them run with it.
That's
see what they come back
awesome.
With.
Well, it sounds like you're definitely the right lady for the job. So,
oh, someone's going to tap
amazing.
Me on the shoulder soon, I'm sure
so.
Of it.
Now, tell me, when did you start acquiring all your cookbooks? Because you've got your 1,200 cookbooks. When did that all begin?
Well, I've been collecting cookbooks for a long time. I love, you know, you'll still see me here going into the Sammy's and the op shops and all that sort of thing, because I love the old, you know, you'll pick up a beautiful old, in Australia it's the CWA. What's the equivalent here of the Christian Women's Association?
The Edmonds.
Yeah, that
like
kind
the
of
Edmonds
thing, yeah.
cookbook, the Those original
books,
ones.
They're
yes.
beautiful, and you look back and you see the, you know, where the influences have come from. You see all that, you know, the French cooking and all the old styles in there, and you see I'm fascinated as well with the, you know, during the war years, and they didn't have ingredients and they'd have to save their money up for certain things, and how they, you know, how they sort of cope with all of that. So yeah, I mean, I love all that sort of thing. I mean, my modern cookbook collection probably started when I started the main ingredients. Because then I suddenly had people chasing me, wanting me to review their books, you know, and so then you'd start to get all these books coming in, and you know, you were spoiled for choice. So,
okay,
and that was when I became really passionate about it. But I'm terrible; I can't, you know, people cull their book collections. I'm like, how can you do that?
I can't cull cookbooks. I do others,
give
but not
them
cookbooks.
To me. You know, like, don't give them away to people that won't appreciate.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, the husband's sitting there going, no more cookbooks. We can't take any more cookbooks.
I think I actually have to bring mine around here for him to realise how few I have.
It's not that bad, Vanessa. It's not. I would like everyone to know that the walls are not covered in cookbooks, but we have some nice bookshelves.
You do, which is
some
lucky
very
I
good
think you
books
chose your house for the inbuilt bookshelves.
They're not inbuilt. We bought them with us.
Of course.
Don't forget, they all had a home in Melbourne on those shelves.
Right.
Yes.
And is your mum still around? You mentioned her. No, she's not around.
No, my mum passed away just last year in October.
I'm sorry to hear
that.
Yeah,
it was very sad.
Yeah, that's sad. But she did see the fact that you have taken on her passion for food through your life.
Yeah, kind of. She unfortunately suffered from dementia, so it's quite sad, and I don't think she ever really sad that she ever really, you know, I mean, she came to Dubai. We had the most amazing time together in Dubai. She came over quite a few times while I was there and stayed with me, and I had a penthouse apartment in the Intercontinental Hotel, and it was just wonderful. And I've always, you know, she was such a great cook. And, you know, she had this gourmet food store, and she really was my inspiration and where my love of food came from. But it was funny, we were in Dubai one night, and we'd had a few cocktails at Trader Vic's, and so we were quite merry. And she finally confessed to me, because I've grown up never being able to bake. I can't bake. I love to cook, but I can't bake. And I can't blame my oven anymore, because I've had so many ovens in so many countries, and it just...
It's not your thing.
It's not my thing. And my sister is like, you know, makes me sick. She's the CWA princess and can make scones and sponges and pavlovas and apple pies, and, you know, I love her to death, but she's just perfect. And I can't compete with that. I can't do it. And I thought mum could as well, but then this night she'd had a few drinks and she confessed to me that all those beautiful birthday cakes that she'd made for me, she'd never made them. She'd gone and bought them and then trizzed them up and put Barbie dolls in them and made amazing icing sculptures on them and all that sort of thing, but she'd never actually baked the cakes.
Wow.
And I'd lived my whole life thinking that it's supposed to be genetic. You know, how come my sister got that gene and I didn't? And then I found out that she didn't have it either. You know, she was really the...
Which is the cook. She was the...
Like me.
The loved
the cooking. The pâtés and the terrines and the, you know, beautiful family meals and all that sort of thing, and a real savoury girl, which I am as well. So,
wow.
Yeah. But yeah, it was sad to lose her, but I'd lost her many years ago because of the dementia.
Yeah, that is very sad.
So yeah, I think she got the beginnings of the main ingredient when I was in Australia. And of course, you know, all the hotel bit in Dubai, but I'm sad that she didn't get to see this, because she would have really...
Oh, she would be amazed, yeah.
She would have loved it.
Yeah, I'm sorry for you too, but...
Yeah.
Maybe somewhere, Kelly, maybe she's somewhere.
I just hope she's forgiven me, because I shared her special prawn pate recipe at her funeral and gave it away, so she's probably rolling in her grave still, because I've given away the family secret. But she made a lot of money out of that pate. It was time
too
to...
too funny. Do you have a favourite cuisine?
No, I can't. That's like having a favourite child, isn't it, really?
It's too hard, isn't it?
You couldn't limit yourself to that. I love Japanese, and I love Thai, and I love Italian, and Spanish, you know, I love a lot of Spanish. My mother-in-law did some strange things while I was there. And a lot of their cooking didn't seem, you know, they're not so much into the spices and things, and I love spicy things. I love chilies. I love Mexican, not Tex-Mex, real good Mexican. Anything Latin American, you know, most, can't have a, Vanessa.
Yes. Is it a hard question?
I'm becoming traumatised now.
Is there a food you can't stand or you would avoid?
I had chitlins once.
Which, sorry?
Chitlins in Korea on an American base, and they were like some sort of intestinal thing. And I mean, I've eaten eyeballs and I've eaten intestines and offal and I've eaten just pretty – I'm an extreme eater. I've done most of it. But those were – they looked like little sliced champignons and they were the most disgusting thing I've ever had and I just would never touch those again probably unless you – put lots of garlic with them and white wine. That cures everything, I suppose.
That does cure everything. Yeah.
I put white wine in everything. I put white wine in Jonathan's paella. The only thing that he cooks really well is paella. And when he's not looking, I go and put white wine in it.
Yes,
it makes it so much better.
It sure does. And I saw your photo of it the other night when
I that was mine.
Yes, you made it. Yes. And I also made one at my house on the same evening, which was very funny.
Oh,
ordered by
that's
my
a bit worrying,
yes, I know. Ordered by my son. And then I went to Instagram later and I laughed because I realized you and I had just
produced the same dish.
Yours was a prettier photo.
But he's a traditionalist. It's like, no, you know, you can't put
white wine
in it. You can't put herbs. You can't put chorizo in it. That's not, you know.
Oh, because that's the tourist version.
That's the Jamie Oliver version, you know. Like, so
sorry,
he's
mine's
very
got
much
chorizo.
A traditionalist, but I'm not like that. You know, whatever tastes good.
Exactly.
Whatever's in the fridge, get rid of it.
Exactly. Now, to finish off is a hard question as well, but I ask everyone this, but for you it's going to be really difficult.
Okay.
What is your favourite cookbook?
Oh, come on.
You only have to pick one out of 1,200.
Gee.
You must have a current favourite.
Oh.
I know. I realise it's really going to be quite traumatising.
I'm trying to think of one that I...
I know.
You see, because I do cook... from them all. You know, if you go up and have a look up there, they've all got horrible little post-it note things all the way through them because they're either things that I'm going to cook or
have noticed over a glass of wine that you'd like to.
Oh, yeah, I really like to, you know, because I take them to bed.
Yeah, that's what I do too.
The husband's had to move out because basically it's me and the cookbooks, really. That's all, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That's as far as my energies will extend to.
That's quite funny. I had a very similar conversation with Trudy Nelson.
We should start a club.
She hates novels. She hates fiction. She just reads cookbooks. So it's quite interesting to find that there are others
So I
similar.
Have, Vanessa, I have a question for you then.
Oh, no. This is not my interview.
Yeah. Oh, yes. No. I have a question for you. Food or sex?
Oh, I don't think I should go on to this on the podcast.
All right. We'll do part two. You can think about that one for a while and get back to me.
I'll think about that when you start your podcast. You can have the right to ask me that. Thank you very much, Kelly. It has been absolutely gorgeous catching up with you. We may catch up with you again later on because I'm sure there's much more we can talk about.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Food, Family and Friends Podcast, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com.
You see, because I do cook from them all. You know, if you go up and have a look up there, they've all got horrible little post-it note things all the way through them because they're either things that I'm going to cook or
have noticed over a glass of wine that you'd like to.
Oh, yeah, I really like to, you know, because I take them to bed.
Yeah, that's what I do too.
The husband's had to move out because basically it's me and the cookbooks, really. That's all, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That's as far as my energies will extend to.
That's quite funny. I had a very similar conversation with Trudy Nelson.
We should start a club.